From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, fears and anxiety. And at the end of the program tonight, our Memorial Day tribute to veterans who have given their lives for our freedom. Very special moment. That'll be at the end of the show. Here's what's happening. More than a dozen people have died after an outbreak of a rare disease in southern India that health officials are now warning could cause a global epidemic. Health officials have imposed emergency measures in the southwestern state of Kerala after more than 40 people have been infected with a virus which causes flu-like symptoms, leading to an agonizing brain swelling condition known as encephalitis. And they say there is a possibility it could cause a global epidemic. Alan Bean, who became the fourth man to walk on the moon and turned to painting years later to tell the story of NASA's Apollo missions as they began receding into history, has died over the weekend at the Houston Methodist Hospital. He was 86 years old. Mr. Bean stepped onto the lunar surface, preceded by Pete Conrad, November of 1969. Just got a call from Cheryl Regan. She is the wife of the late Russ Regan. Russ just passed away. He's well known in the music industry for discovering the Beach Boys and Neil Diamond. Several years ago, he was on our program, and he had been fighting an illness. Russ Regan has passed. Spam, that's what it's called. Hormel Food Corporation recalling more than 228,000 pounds of canned pork and chicken products because they may be contaminated with pieces of metal. Hormel, based in Austin, Minnesota, received four complaints from consumers who said they found pieces of metal inside the cans. Some people also suffered mild mouth injuries when eating the products. Let's check in with our food safety coach, Jeff Nelkin. Boy, this is a strange one, Jeff, huh?
Sure. You know, it must probably, you know, some of the metallic pieces that are, you know, grinding away at some of the products got shored down and fell into the product. If anybody has this product, the Spam product, I'd like them to call 800-523-4635 to verify that this product is not one of the contaminated items sitting on your shelf. So that would be the best advice at this point in time.
Spam was introduced years ago and really became the food for our troops, talking about Memorial Day, during the war, because they needed to get meat to the troops. They didn't know how to ship it, and Spam was perfect for them.
Exactly, and the taste, I guess, from even back then carried through, so it's still a popular product today. I think it's celebrating its maybe 81st birthday.
Jeff's website, foodsafetycoach.com. Spam. I haven't had it since I was a little boy, but 228,000 pounds of Spam recalled. A Little Caesars pizza employee in Florida took matters into his own hands when he shot and killed a scissors-wielding attacker who was wearing a clown mask. Police responded to the pizza shop in Holly Hill after receiving calls about shots being fired. When they arrived, they found the attacker laying in the parking lot with a clown mask and scissors on the ground. The suspect was taken to the hospital, where he later died. Well, as President Donald Trump has teased a summit between him and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un that it could take place, the U.S. on Monday halted new sanctions against the rogue nation. Halted the sanctions. The White House was poised to announce additional sanctions on North Korea as early as tomorrow, but decided to hold off doing so. Mr. Trump said that a U.S. delegation was in North Korea to plan for a potential meeting with Kim. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com, with us. John, it's still alive and kicking, I guess.
Well, you remember what I predicted,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I can tell you that the gamesmanship that's going on right now is just nothing short of spectacular. We're witnessing, George, in President Trump, one of the most hands-on negotiators who's involved in every aspect of, you know, the diplomacy that's going on with North Korea, and that his walk-away tactic, which is what he did last Thursday, was right out of his book, you know, The Art of the Deal. I mean, it was written with Tony Schwartz. That is a brilliant tactic. It really showed exactly what I said, that North Korea has much to gain. And the reality is that Trump is making the North Koreans an offer they can't refuse. Don't forget, the contrast between North Korea and South Korea is so extreme, and Kim understands this. I mean, he may have pillaged and plundered his family in North Korea for years and are quite wealthy, but the populace over there is living in hell, widespread poverty and starvation. So they know what it was when they went to those South Korean Winter Games and they saw the prosperity that exists in North Korea, the 11th ranking economic power in the world, versus one that, you know, lies somewhere between Mauritius and Mozambique. So I think that Kim is very serious about this. He's not going to get, Trump has backed off, and I mentioned this before, the idea of getting unilateral nuclear disarmament right away. The goal now is to get a peace treaty to end the Korean War that ended, you know, the 27th of July, I believe, in 1953. Once they have the peace treaty and the economic development promises and the security promises, then I think you're going to see North Korea begin to fool all the skeptics and begin to denuclearize in order to come into the modern world, as it were, and obtain that economic development.
Well, John, you've been spot on. Charlie R. Smith has been spot on, so let's keep our fingers crossed. Lava from Hawaii's Kilauea volcano has covered now one of the wells of the island's geothermal power plants, prompting fears of a toxic gas leak as authorities are urging residents to evacuate a nearby estate due to fast-moving flows. It just hasn't stopped. Iron-rich rocks near ancient lake sites on Mars could hold vital clues that show life once existed there, according to researchers. That's exciting. And here's Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates, with his weekly report for us. Stephen, what's up?
Hi, George. Hey, mostly moon this time to talk about. And as you reported, of course, the sad passing of Navy Captain Alan Bean from Apollo 12. Folks, there are only 4 living Apollo moonwalkers right now alive. And, George, it's interesting, if we talk just briefly about Apollo 12, back on November the 14th, 1969, the first incumbent president to ever watch a live launch was President Richard Nixon. But 36 seconds into that launch, some sort of lightning event either struck the entire Apollo Saturn V rocket. That could have been a disaster. But luckily, that particular crew, Pete Conrad and Alan Bean, both, by the way, Navy, that was a full Navy crew, and the only other full Navy crew to the moon was that of Apollo 14. But what happened on the surface of the moon, George, very briefly, is when Captain Bean was walking around the moon, he pulled out the first color television and accidentally pointed it at the sun, so we weren't going to get those fantastic images. They came back with 75 pounds of moon rocks. He himself, as we talk about Captain Alan Bean and celebrate his life, only 37 years old. Incredible. But, George, the live sky continues with the moon. I need not remind those that are outdoors on this beautiful Memorial Day weekend. If you're seeing the moon right now, folks, it moves very soon, George, into early Tuesday, the beautiful 2018 full flower moon, now 246,000 miles away from your eye. And here's another trivia fact. It's now in a constellation that many say is the 13th sign of the zodiac. It's a group of stars called the constellation Ophiuchus. Phenomenal stuff. Don't miss it. This is one of the smallest full moons of the year. George, the planets in the evening, we look in the west, we see brilliant Venus moving toward the south. At sunset, Jupiter, Saturn, and Mars rising now as we speak. Always remember to keep your eyes to the skies and email me at drsky@cox.net. And George, we'll be doing our Mars and Media Madness announcement here for folks in the west, a big event, and we'll be talking more about that in weeks to come.
You got it. Thank you, Stephen. Dr. Sky. Well, today marks my mother's 89th birthday. And earlier today, when I was asking her what she wanted, she said to come on the show and say a few words. Well, we taped her just a few moments ago because you can't say no to your mom. Hey, Mom, first of all, happy birthday.
Why, thank you. Thank you for remembering, honey.
And I will definitely be there for the 90th, so I'm looking forward to that. But look, you're 89 years old, and I know women don't like their ages kicked around, but what is the best part of turning 89 for you?
Oh, boy, the best part, let me think. Well, I'll tell you. The best part, George, I think I've lived long enough, honey, to watch my children create beautiful families. That's the best part.
What is the toughest part?
Well, honestly, honey, the worst part is living long enough, honey, to have to say goodbye to so many of my family members and friends, even though I know I'll see them someday. That's difficult. Yeah. The older you get, the more of your friends seem to pass on before you.
Well, and we've had a tough couple of years losing.
Yeah, it hasn't been easy.
Glenda and
losing a child, I think, is the hardest thing that can happen to any mother.
Mom, you're being heard by a lot of people right now, and I would like you to basically tell them, what is your special birthday gift? What would you like?
You know what I'd like? I would like to hear that a cure has been found for cancer.
Well, that would be great.
Very happy.
That would be great. And, of course, you have this quick opportunity to say goodnight to everybody who's wishing you a happy birthday. Go ahead.
I will say goodnight, honey, and I'll tell them how I start my day every day, if you let me say that, Georgie.
Sure, go ahead.
I get up every morning, and I read Psalm 118, verse 24, and I sing, "This is the day that the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." And that's what I do. I thank God for his grace and his mercy, and I'm a happy camper.
Happy birthday, Mom. Love you.
Thank you, honey. Bye-bye.
One of a kind, let me tell you. Happy birthday, Mom. Up next, Stephen Bassett joins us as we talk about disclosure next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Stephen Bassett, the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group. He discovered and founded it back in 1996 to end a government-imposed embargo on the truth behind extraterrestrial-related phenomena. He has spoken to audiences around the world. As a matter of fact, he will be joining me this coming weekend at Contact in the Desert in California, and later on at the end of June in Vancouver, British Columbia, at the Architects of the New Paradigm Conference. I'm looking forward to that. Stephen, welcome to the program, my friend.
Good to be with you again, George.
My gosh, so much is going on. I wanted to get your reaction to a couple things that have been going on, and then we'll just get into this discussion. Government's kicking around an idea of funding SETI in a lump sum of about $10 million. They haven't provided financing in God knows how long. SETI's been getting private financing. Good or bad thing?
Bad thing.
How come?
SETI has been privately funded for some time because the government stopped funding, and a lot of money was put in. Yuri Milner turned up, a Russian billionaire, and put some money in. But I'm afraid I'm not a fan of SETI. They're looking for signals in the sky. The government was funding it for a while when the government knew that there's extraterrestrials already here. In fact, SETI was set up, essentially, at the same time the Space Act was, roughly the same time the Space Act was passed and NASA was launched, in order to take some pressure off the government. As the phenomena continued to be seen around the world, the government simply couldn't act as if they didn't care at all. And so this idea, we'll fund looking for signals in the sky. It shows that we actually think there could be extraterrestrials out there, but just don't pay attention to the ones flying around here, right? And so essentially SETI becomes kind of a beard or a front operation for the truth embargo itself. Worse, over the years, people from SETI or SETI-related organizations have gone on, you know, television shows and what have you, and tried to debunk the work of some of the researchers in our field. So I am not a fan, and Yuri Milner is throwing his money down the drain. And I sent a message into Congress saying that why not just take $10 million out and burn it on the White House lawn? Because the ETs are already here, and there's plenty of people that know that. Make a few calls, and you'll find out.
Stephen, recently we've been getting incredible stories that have been coming out of government and wherewithal about pilots spotting UFOs traveling at unbelievably fast speeds, yelling into cameras and microphones, "Oh my God, this is not of this world." When's the world going to wake up and say, something's happening here?
The world is waking up. And I definitely want to talk about that tonight at length, to the extent we can. You're, of course, referring to the development surrounding an organization called the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science,
yeah,
which was launched formally on October 11th of last year. And I think a lot of your audience is aware of it. Many may not be. You can easily Google To the Stars Academy. That's all. It's just that part, To the Stars Academy, and the website comes right up. Let me be clear. This is probably the most extraordinary development in the history of this issue, going all the way back to Roswell, from the standpoint, in terms of the history of the truth embargo, going back to Roswell. And I am very much aware of it, and I'm assessing it from 21 years of experience of dealing with a disclosure issue. Other people who haven't had that experience, naturally, they're finding this and that they don't like, or they're frustrated because this is a long-suffering group of people that us have been dealing with this issue for so long, and they want everything told right away. No, it's not the way it's going to work. But let me be clear. This is an extraordinary, unprecedented development, and let me describe it to your listeners.
Sure.
For a number of reasons, some of which I'll be presenting at length, these are political developments going all the way back to 93, but certainly back to 2013, and also because of the growing evidence and interest on the public. Apparently, a significant number of people inside the military intelligence complex, I'll leave industrial out for now, realize that the wave of interest and the mounting evidence is heading toward the beach, and it's going to break pretty soon, and they want to get out in front of it. This is not surprising. I've said many times that there are very large number of people inside the military intelligence complex that are very well aware there's extraterrestrials, and even within the political agencies and so forth, or organizations. That doesn't mean they're going to talk about it. It doesn't mean they've been given deep briefings or tours of underground facilities. They just know. They've been tipped off, a little wink and a nudge from a major contact, or they figured it out on themselves, or they just looked at the public evidence. So they know, but they don't speak about it. It's just not in their best interest. And, of course, the government's position is there is nothing there at all. But they're there, and they've always been there. And so what's happening is the consensus is building inside that they need to get on the right side of this issue, not only for their own benefit, for the public relations benefits, but for the interest of the country. And so what happened is that a side door opened to the military intelligence complex, and out popped or came together a group of people, the To the Stars Academy team.
Headed up by Blink-182's Tom DeLonge, the musician.
Exactly. And this is a little bit confusing for some people. Why Tom DeLonge? But there's an explanation for that. Yeah, Tom DeLonge is an accomplished musician who has sold 30 million records, navigated two bands through the treacherous music industry, very successful, but a very solid life, saved his money, created a number of companies. He's an autodidact. He's read more books on the ET UFO subject than probably you or I together, George.
Yeah.
And he has the money to fly around and attend events in hopes of making contacts. And he'd been doing that for a while. But lo and behold, what happened is, I believe sometime in 2015, he'd been knocking on the doors for a while, and suddenly the door opened up and somebody said, "Come on in, Tom."
He knocked on the right door, didn't he?
Yeah, well, he kept knocking, If you knock long enough, somebody inside may figure out, maybe we want to talk to him.
Sure.
And so this developed in 2015. A project was put together over a period of roughly 14 months, which he first announced on Coast to Coast AM, your co-hoster, George Knapp. This was, I think, March 27th. It's in the archives,
yes,
of 2016. And I heard what he said. It was a bit rambling. He's not a skilled speaker. It's all right. And I'm going, this is hard for me to accept. Wow, this is out there. He said he has a 10-person advisory team provided by people inside the Pentagon and the CIA to help get information out, to a multi-media approach that would be, very palatable for people, general public and what have you. And I'm going, wow. And then he said, we're going to have some books out soon, one of which is about to be published, Secret Machines. And I'm going, okay. Well, 30 days later, Secret Machines was published, and I realized it was all true, what he was saying. And from that point on, I have been pretty much taking what is developed at face value.
And let's talk about what's coming out of that, Stephen, and much more when we come back in a moment. Stephen Bassett with us, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. He has been pounding away at this for 20-plus years, and doesn't give up. and he's making a lot of progress. So we're going to come back in a moment. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Stephen Bassett. As I mentioned, he's going to be at Contact in the Desert in California with me next weekend, this coming weekend. Full information at events at coasttocoastam.com. Well, some more events. I just mentioned I'll be with Stephen Bassett this weekend at Contact in the Desert. June 9th, I'll be in Las Vegas at the Silverton Casino for our dramatic live stage show with special guest John Greenwald to talk about UFOs. George Knapp will be with us, of course. Danyon Brinkley, the man who died twice and came back to talk about it. Live band, Q&A, meet and greet, so much more. Full information, go to events at the top of the coasttocoastam.com homepage and click that. It'll take you to the Las Vegas event. That is Saturday, June 9th. And then Saturday, August 25th at Asheville, North Carolina, we are going back there at the Diana Wortham Theater. You can get tickets by going to dwtheater.com or again at events at coasttocoastam.com. We are back with Stephen Bassett, the executive director of the Paradigm Research Group, as we are talking about disclosure, and it is coming. I think in the last year, Stephen, it has been more evident that more and more things are leaking out than ever before. It's been amazing.
George, I'm sure you remember this. Many years ago, Art had a concept that he would talk about frequently, and it was called the quickening.
Yes. Hey, matter of fact, he wrote a book with Whitley Strieber, basically on that topic.
Right. And what's happening is it's not the same, but the concept is some similarities. What's happening is kind of along those lines. I said years ago that when we finally reach the last mile of this 70-year truth embargo marathon, that things are going to start picking up speed. New things would be happening very, very, one after another. It would be hard to keep up. It would be hard to follow. Media coverage, organizations, conferences, all of this. And it would be like the quickening, heading towards something, which, of course, is disclosure. And just to give your audience a sense of what I'm talking about, let's just start with Contact in the Desert. By the way, I think I've got something like 20 conferences listed for this year.
Wow.
I'm speaking, or I've already been booked, or I've already spoken 15, which is a personal record for me,
That's
and it's
amazing.
Only halfway through the year. But Contact in the Desert became so big, it outgrew the huge Joshua Tree Resort.
It outgrew the desert.
Now, that was quite an event. It was the Burning Man of UFO conferences. It was incredibly hot but rugged, and people kind of loved that, and that's cool, but it simply couldn't handle it. So consequently, it's moved. Well, it's still in the desert, but it's gone uptown.
Indian Wells.
It's moved into the Indian Wells Resort, which is basically South Palm Springs, a huge resort with lots of air conditioning. So there's that, all right? And take the International UFO Congress Conference, which for years was in Laughlin and then was held in Fountain Hills for a while. It's outgrown the Weekapa Resort there in Fountain Hills, and so it's moving downtown next year to the Sheraton Grand Phoenix, a huge hotel, right? Alien Con, which is an event, it's a couple years now, that's backed by History Channel and A&E Networks. It's a cross between a conference and one of those event kind of Comic Cons. It's now this year is going to be in the Pasadena Convention Center. This is June 15 to 17. I'll be there. 20,000 plus people are going to be there at that event. Architects of a New Paradigm is in its fourth year. The Roswell Festival is coming up again, of course. 120,000 people went through the Roswell Museum last year. The MUFON Symposium, which is July 27, 29 in Cherry Hill, suburb of Philadelphia. Luis Elizondo, which is the spokesperson really for the team and the interface between the two of the stars.
Can we say he was a former CIA person? Is that accurate?
He wasn't a CIA. He was a former intelligence guy, worked in multiple agencies. And has studied microbiology and academic stuff, but he's a very down-to-earth fellow. He looks like a hog rider, right? He's got tattoos, big burly fellow, very easy to talk to. He is the interface between the To the Stars Academy team and I guess you could say the UFO research community, which is been a bit of a rough going because this is a very complicated project. But he's a great guy, and he's been doing a lot of interviews. He is going to be speaking live at the MUFON Symposium that was just announced. Now, that is an historical event, and this is all planned. Essentially, what the team has decided is that it's not easy to deal with the ETFO community because they know a lot. And they have lots of questions. And the way this program is rolling out, they can't answer a lot of those questions. And it's a problem because they have to stick with the rules. And we could talk about that later if you like. But there's some rules they're following in order to be able to do what they're doing based on the authorization they have, but we don't know who authorized it. But what we have is the spokesperson for the To the Stars Academy team, which is made up of people now not working for the government, but it worked for the government for their whole career, CIA, DOD, Skunk Works, you name it, is going to be speaking at the organization's symposium that is the best known, and I still think the old, possibly the oldest now, running organization on this subject in July. I encourage people to be there. Meanwhile, MUFON is growing again. Part of the reason for that is MUFON Television was created just a while ago by Ron James.
You're right. It slowed down, then it really picked up again.
Yes, this MUFON Television is really bringing people in. It's going to have a huge amount of content. It's very slick, very sophisticated. So MUFON's going uptown, right? Meanwhile, they're going to live stream the symposium. Ron James is doing that as well. So you see what's happening there. And the Sonoma International Film Festival. A lot of people don't know this. A lot of your listeners don't know this. For the last 8 years, this film festival is a very well-known and mainstream film festival, has held a UFO symposium embedded inside of it. It's the only film festival of the kind in the world that does this. And films are shown, speakers are there. This is possible because long-term resident Jim Ledwith, who is a researcher, speaker, and also a contactee, has been organizing and funding this for this past 8 years so people could attend these events for free. And they're going to do it again next year for the ninth time. Now, I just found out that Christopher O'Brien, you know Christopher,
mm-hmm.
of course.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher O'Brien is right in the middle of launching an amazing project. It's called the San Luis Valley Camera Monitoring Project. What he's going to do, and I mean, he's doing it. It's happening. He is going to put sophisticated cameras that are kind of what you would find on the Nellis Air Force test range. They can capture motion and react to it immediately, zoom in on the object. They can film it in several spectral regions. He's going to put these cameras all over San Luis Valley.
We need those to catch Bigfoot, too.
Well, it'll catch a lot of stuff. In San Luis Valley in Colorado, a lot of people know, is one of the most active area for sightings in the world. So those cameras are going to be out there pretty soon. He's even putting two cameras on the California coast. One is at Ron James' house, which overlooks the ocean, and the other is a colleague of mine and a supporter about a mile down the road who's also on the ocean. And these cameras are triangulating on the Santa Catalina Island and that area around it, because there's been a lot of activity out there. That's going down. More conferences are coming. This, and there's other events. And, of course, the whole To the Stars Academy, we haven't even touched on what's developing there. And I'm going to be giving two and a half hour lectures on that, the whole political history of this, going back to the Clintons as well, at Roswell and at Contact in the Desert. So this is what I mean by things are picking up speed at such a pace. And all of this is about a subject that the government says doesn't even exist.
Is it being done by design, Stephen, or is it really coming out because of whistleblowers?
Well, the To the Stars Academy is definitely a project that's been carefully designed. About 30 to 40 insiders made a decision that they wanted to go proactive on this issue because they felt it was time for the truth to get out. They felt the government's getting a bad rap, and it might be nice to be on the right side of this issue, part of the solution, not the problem.
Are they doing this with government sanction?
Well, that's the thing. How they got authorized it, we don't know. Okay. How high the authorization went, we don't know. But we know, based on some information that came from Jim Semivan, one of the team members and a total former career CIA guy, there's another 30 people or so inside, I guess you could say, backing up the 10 that were announced, and you can read about and definitely go read their bios at the To the Stars Academy website. And the plan, was informally announced, as I said, on Coast to Coast in March of 2016. I believe it was supposed to formally launch shortly after the election that year or early 2017. However, things took a rather odd turn, as you know. First, the emails of John Podesta were made public, which threw a big monkey wrench into that project because a lot of that stuff was not supposed to be out. Mm-hmm. And then the person they thought was going to win the election didn't win, and that created a problem for them. And so they took about 10 months to sort of reconfigure and reconsider what they were going to do, and then they formally launched on October 11th. They then delivered a huge story to the New York Times, which published two stories on December 16th of 2017. Also, just as a sort of good faith measure, they got authorization. We don't know from who, because the front office of the Pentagon is acting like, we don't know. I mean, we don't see the docs. We don't know what's going on. And that's what you would expect. That's the front door. These people are coming out the side door. All right. They got authorization to bring public three clips of gun camera footage from UAP intercepts by American military jets. Well, guess what? That's the first authorized release of gun camera footage in history.
Wow.
From any country. There was an unauthorized thing that slipped out a number of years ago, not noticed, also involving the Nimitz event. But this is huge. Why? Because, as I've said many times, the United States military has thousands of canisters filled with gun camera footage of UAP intercepts. They've been intercepting these objects since the 40s. And when they go up in our airspace, and this is true of Spain or the UK or France or any of the other countries, and they go up to intercept these things in the airspace, they film it. They have to film it. What are they going to do? Have the pilots come back and leave the plane and then go and get in front of a sketch artist and draw what they saw?
No, it's not going to happen that way.
These gun camera footages are out there, but you cannot get them. You can FOI them all day long. They never come out, because for those to come out, the truth embargo would be on its last leg.
What's amazing, too, though, Stephen, is the excitement of the pilots that you can hear on some of these clips.
Absolutely. And these guys are trained people. They have incredibly sophisticated cameras that can track these things, even when they're moving at 2,000 miles an hour. And I'm sure that there's clips with even more excited pilots. But just the symbology of having these things released, and again, I can't imagine how this happened. I know the history of this will come out. One day we're going to learn the inside mechanisms that allowed this to happen. But the Nimitz footage alone. Christopher Mellon, who is the political operative, he is the one that has huge amounts of experience connected to intelligence and politics, working as an interface between the two. You should read his career bio; it's incredible. When they made the announcement for the Two Stars Academy, October 11th, he gets up there and basically recites the chronology of the Nimitz encounter, the one that we see the footage of.
Well, and I know, and being in the Navy, let me say this, Stephen. You can't get close to an aircraft carrier, not even close.
Oh, well, yeah, and the thing had already been tracked by the support ships before the Nimitz even arrived, and they'd been tracking it for days. When the Nimitz arrived, they had the jets; they sent those up. And when he describes what this thing was doing, he does everything but say, "And that clearly was an extraterrestrial craft." And this is a very important thing for your listeners to understand. Yeah, I have listened to every interview they've made. I've got 80. Interviews and television coverages of this team on my website right now, as well as 200 plus articles, maybe 300 articles about this team and what's going on. If you read it all, you will find they never say the word alien. They never say the word extraterrestrial. They never say there's an extraterrestrial presence, right? They never release any classified material. They don't violate any non-disclosure oath. In other words, they're playing it absolutely straight down the middle. Because that is the way they must operate on this. Otherwise, there's going to get pushback from those inside that maybe are not thrilled about what's going on.
Do they say UFO at all?
I think they may have said UFO. Yeah, yeah. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
But extraterrestrial. And that's so. So what Mellon did was, though, and you listen to this. It's up on the website, to the Stars Academy website. It's their announcement. It's about 37 minutes long. Listen to this segment that Mellon describes the Nimitz incident, and you listen to it. He does everything but hold up a giant side saying, I'm not saying it was extraterrestrials. It was extraterrestrial. So that it gives you an idea of what is happening and how powerful this is. And the only reason that this hasn't already snowballed into a huge media frenzy of sorts, possibly moving us very close to disclosure, is because it's all unfolding. The history is a messy thing, George. It has a lot of moving parts, nobody really controls it. It's all happening in the middle of probably the most amazing and bizarre political chaos I've ever seen in my lifetime. It's consuming the media. It's distracting the public. And for that reason, all of this is happening in the background behind this. But that doesn't make it any less important. And I assure you, when the media has a little more time, there's going to be attention paid to this. And let me just add one more thing. In May of 2017, just about 4 or 5 months before they announced the To the Stars Academy, a person associated with the To the Stars Academy, though we didn't know it at the time, goes on the most respected news magazine program in the country, CBS 60 Minutes, and tells Laura Logan flat out, there's an extraterrestrial presence. And when she says, you worry people will think you're crazy, he says, I don't give a damn. And then she goes back and says, you mean they're actually here? And he says, yeah. And this is a billionaire who has had a contract with NASA since 2000 to build space habitats, and apparently he wasn't concerned that NASA would be upset if he tells the world there's an extraterrestrial presence. And I'm talking, of course, about Bob Bigelow, who we later learned from the New York Times articles that he was the one that encouraged Senator Reid to launch that ATIP program.
That $20 billion fund thing. Right.
Yeah, he was the one that encouraged him to do it, and some of that money went to him because he was doing research for this this group. And so he's very, very much tied to it and behind it. In fact, Bob Bigelow is behind most everything of a large scale that's happened going all the way back to 93. And, of course, I talk about this at length. But when he said, I don't give a damn to Laura Logan, he became my lifelong hero. Because there's a lot of billionaires out there, George, and they damn well know there's an extraterrestrial presence, but they don't have the courage to go in front of a camera.
Right.
Say, folks, they're here.
It's dramatic. It really is. And I got to compliment you, Stephen, on your efforts over the years. I mean, I've known you since my St. Louis days, and you do not give up, do you?
Well, you're active. When you're an activist on a major issue, once you commit, say it's civil rights. Say the activists that engaged the civil rights issues in the 50s.
Once you're in, you go in full boat.
Yeah, you don't get in there and go, well, given it 5 years, we still haven't got a Civil Rights Act, probably should do something else. No, you're in it because you know something has to happen. Something is terribly wrong, and it needs to be fixed.
Stay with us, Stephen. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back at the top of the hour. We'll talk more about your efforts for disclosure, and we'll open up the phone lines.